I am now in a very strange position to introduce myself. I am not very used with the position to speak at Focus on Open Science conferences, although it happened, I have to admit, a few times now. I thank you very much the program co-organizers for inviting me to give a speech, considering a bit of some sort of expertise which I can't judge myself on citizen science. And one of today's topic is citizen science. This is I'm not going to introduce myself properly. I would say that I work for Scientific Knowledge Services. I'm the director of this very small company. And I'm very proud and thankful for being here with you. This is a short reminder about the Slido interaction tool. Please do use it and pose your questions there. You will find it great. You don't have to register, and it will bring us a lot of questions for the panel as well. So citizen science, why should we bother with citizen science? I'm not going to give a definition, but we will find it along the way. Please use Slido to interact during this presentation as well. We will go in this 30 minutes through some examples of citizen science. We will try to present the current context, to zoom out, to understand the place of citizen science, zoom in and try to see how citizen science works in Hungary, and then maybe we'll find together a definition. Do you like butterflies? I hope you do. Who doesn't like butterflies? Just one, two person doesn't like, maybe three. What about more butterflies? Well, these are not normal butterflies. These are the monarch butterflies. And they used to exist in billions. They only exist now in hundreds of millions. People from US and Canada were wondering where the monarch butterflies are going, because they disappear during the winter. And they couldn't find the answer, while their Mexican friends were asking where the monarch butterflies are coming from, because they don't know, and they used to appear during around the day of death, and they were thinking they are coming as the souls of their ancestors. It was until 1975 when scientists, with the help of people like many of us, non-trained scientists, discovered together in 1975 where they are coming from, where they are going to. They were actually vacationing in Mexico. They were all going there for a short vacation during the winter. And these great pollinators, because this is one of the most important roles of these butterflies, were going there with a generation called the Matusale generation, the super butterflies. A normal monarch butterfly is having a life expectancy of 5 weeks. But these butterflies are living 8 to 9 months, which is the equivalent of about 600 human years. None of them has ever been to Mexico, so they don't know how to get there. They have a kind of internal genetic GPS which guides them from North America, from USA and Canada to Mexico, 5,000 kilometers away. None of them have been there. They will be there, they will enjoy a vacation in Mexico during the winter, and they will start their trip back to the birthplace of their species. They will not make it. They will mate, give birth, and die, but they will not make the trip back. It will be the second generation that will continue the trip, and then the third generation that will continue the trip, and then the fourth generation that will continue the trip. And finally, they will arrive where their grandparents have been birthed. And who knows, nobody knows at this moment how they get there, how they make this trip, and why every fourth generation is living 600 human years. This is an example of citizen science. It couldn't have been identified without having projects like this one, the Monarch Watch. What the Monarch Watch is doing is tagging butterflies. And last year, and the year before and so on, since early 90s, they were tagging about 80,000 butterflies each year. Only 1% of these butterflies will be recovered, and they will start they started to build, and they contribute now to the data set that the scientists are working with. Without citizens' involvement, this study couldn't have been started and continued. This is an example how it's tagged, and this is an example how a scientist, that we can see here, actually two of them, is working with a citizen that caught this butterfly somewhere in USA, tagged the butterfly, and is releasing for a scientist to find it. This is how they work. As you can see, it's not only helping to collect data, but they are interacting in a greater way. Now, maybe you don't think the butterflies are important, or maybe the majority of you think it's important, but they are the greatest pollinators, and you all know how pollinating flowers and helping all the biodiversity process is keeping us alive. The further implications is not only about collecting the data. It has implications in conserving and policy making. It has been noticed that these butterflies won't make this super journey, which for humans is impossible to be made, if the policymakers are not intervening. And they were convincing, with the data from scientists, the farmers to continue to grow milkweed, which is the only flower these monarch butterflies is pollinating and they are feeding from. And they convinced the farmers to donate and to leave some space on their field, on their farms, for milkweed. And it isn't a law, but it's an understanding between scientists, which gives the evidence, and the society, which understands the importance of this evidence. So now on their route, they have enough milkweed to complete this journey. Although in the early 90s, there were estimated about 1 billion of monarch butterflies wintering in Mexico, and now only about 70 million of them. Imagine what a fraction in less than 30 years disappeared because of pesticide and many others. So more work is underway. Farmers understood this, and they have portals, they create a community, they act beyond the scientific effort for making all this happening. Citizen science respects all the other elements of any normal science. There are a lot of articles published as a result of citizen science efforts, like this one, for example, here, from the Royal Society, and we'll have a presenter today from the Royal Society. But they are doing something more. As I said, citizen science is going beyond science. It's going into the relation between science and society. And they are giving, along the way, some other nice things for engaging the society, like this movie, for example, which is a movie which is run in normal cinema and IMAX cinema, getting crowds of millions of people for 1 hour and 40-some minutes to watch science, which I also invite you to watch. And this is one evidence that science could be part of our day-to-day education, passionate education, not necessarily scholastic. Are you thrilled about more other species, the same beautiful as these butterflies? So you probably want to watch at this little fish here. And this little creature, I'm sure you find it very beautiful, this little creature is a very individualized kind of a fish. It doesn't have fins. What it has hands, like us, like humans. So if you look there, these are not fins, they are hands. There are only about 70 individuals that survive nowadays, and they were considered a lost species. If you look to the form of the body, they suggest the transition to amphibians. You can see it better here. And they were found by amateur divers, not by professional divers, not by trained scientists, but by amateur divers. And they brought up to the researchers the evidence that this species it didn't disappear, it still exists. They are contributed. This is a desk of a citizen, a normal citizen, and you see a data sheet where they collect data. You see how they report the data into the scientist data set, and they are actively contributing to continue the research on this species and to conserve this species. There are other examples, which I'm not going to go into such great details, but this is a project which was run in Anvers with the help of 20,000 participants. 90% of the measures passed the quality control, and they were able to give unique evidence that the pollution in the city is not the same as taken from with the evidence from these 3, 4, 5 sensors that exist from research activities. They were able to bring evidence through 20,000 sensors that there are pollution canyons. Two neighboring streets could have significant difference in pollution because the architecture of the building, which is driving corridors of different corridors of pollution. It was the first time when it was brought this evidence with the help, and it was with the help of citizen scientists. Capturing Our Coast is a project in UK where 3,000 people were trained to make observation on the coast of UK. And why I'm giving this example is to understand the magnitude of training 3,000 people spread all over UK to make this activity. Could a library be doing this, or could an academic institution coordinate this large training program? So you may could think that citizen science it's a kind of activity which is only suitable for biodiversity projects or environmental. Nothing could be more wrong. We'll find citizen science, long-term citizen science projects in physics, mathematics, neuroscience, governance, and many others. One of them is a citizen science project which started in 1837 by William Hewill, and he was setting up 9,000 observation posts across the both coasts of the Atlantic. Internet didn't exist, telegraph didn't exist, and 9,000 people were bringing results to scientists to study the tides of the Atlantic Ocean during that time. He is a Queen medalist, not one time, but two times, and he is the guy who coined the term of scientist. He used citizen science in his studies. Another example could be from researchers from Cornell that have been able to identify a possible treatment for Alzheimer, not to stop Alzheimer, but to treat and reverse Alzheimer. And they are using a citizen science project. We see here a step-by-step guide for libraries to help them to identify blood vessels that are stalled. And they were able to reverse Alzheimer to mice. And this is a program, for example, it was Citizen Science Day early in April, when in just 1 hour, citizens contributed to data equivalent of 3 months of lab work in just 1 hour in a Saturday. Maybe another good example is the Deutscher Sprachatlas, which was started by Georg Wanker, again, before any internet, before any telegraph or something. And he was sending 50,000 letters across the German-speaking areas, by which he received 45,000 answers on the dialects. And he was able to create this way 16,000 hand-drawn maps of German dialects. 16,000 drone maps, like this one. By collecting and keeping a conversation with 45,000 citizens in the middle of 19th century. And this is the Digitaler Wanker Atlas in Marburg. This is how it looks, a research center which was created at the beginning with the help of citizen scientists. Nowadays, we see a similar effort from researchers from Cambridge and Zurich for the Swiss Deutsch dialect, German dialects. And it's made with an application this time, not by someone writing handwriting letters. And they could be able to collect 60,000 inputs from scientists via this app. So we see these efforts continuing regardless of the technology. Another example is Ask for Evidence, where people are engaging with policymakers and researchers to bring evidence for normal day-to-day things, including simple things like commercials claiming that if you use this toothpaste, you will get a better health for your mouth or something like this. And they are creating projects to help scientists bring the evidence. There are different ways of performing citizen science. It's a normal engagement that you all probably have an intuition about, and it was maybe reflected in some of my examples, but are some other ways of doing it more different. And one of them is gamification. Like in this one, this is about the Alzheimer, and they created a sort of the game of a game where people are participating in and bringing their input as playing with different images and giving input to scientists. Another example is the reverse way, is seriousification. And this is a great example by a Hungarian, which is now living in Geneva. And he went to the community of gamers. Like this game, EVE Online, is having millions of players. They played around 6 billion years, cumulated together. And it's a very large community. So what he did, he convinced this community and the Icelandic company that is owning this game to integrate science tasks into the game. And the millions of players were creating together with this in this game 30,000 scientists, more than 33 million image classification for what is now ready, the human protein atlas. All proteins in our body are now mapped, and we have a complete atlas, which was run by scientists in Sweden. And 33 million classifications were made in this game. And this is called seriousification. It's another way of doing citizen science. As you see, we go beyond normal science. A zoom out very quickly now. I'm going to tell a kind of a story. We have the science and society together trying to work, although we have a sort of solitude on scientists. What the scientists are doing, if you don't mind, this is a fictional map of what we know and what we don't know. The place in black means what we don't know, and this is what we probably have discovered so far. The scientists are asking somewhere there, at the frontier of our knowledge. And they are going sometimes into the unknown, uncharted map to see what we can discover. This is their normal work. Sometimes they go back and they bring some answers to us. They take some more resources and they go again in the terra incognita to bring more knowledge to us. What they bring hopes, dreams. They bring all sorts of expectation, knowledge, education. They participate in innovation, in laws, and they give meanings to the new discoveries. And finally, new services and new products could be part of our life, new treatments as well. But they act ultimately in a sort of solitude, alone, isolation, because they go into terra incognita. We don't live there. We live in the known part of our world. So it's normal to not let them alone to be in this uncertainty and solitude. It's normal to come closer, both of us, with more resources, not only depending on the official resources that are given to scientists, but to make science maybe more part of our life. As we give time to going to parks, museums, shopping malls, discotheque and bars and something like that, maybe we give some time to help researchers. When UK signed about 21 years ago the Kyoto Protocol, and the UK government decided to sign the UK Protocol, they used a study which spent 57 years, where 120 species of birds with more than 30,000 bird nest observation each year were brought, and the publications were normal public peer review publication with, if I'm allowed to say, Wiley and Nature and these kind of publishers, and they brought the evidence that early legs in the nest were found, which means a climate change, and that was crucial for UK to adhere to the Kyoto Protocol. Now we have this image in our oceans, and we have a new law that is banning the single use of plastics. You probably don't know, but data sets created by citizen scientists were used by European Commission to decide to adopt this new law on to ban single use of plastics. And we have emerging policy from OSPP, the Open Science Policy Platform, LIBER organization, from LERU organization, that is all recommending citizen science to be taken seriously. Liber in particular is looking to a triangulation between libraries, researchers, and the public to create libraries to be an active partner to create infrastructure to support the responsible conduct, to embed good scholarly practices in citizen science projects, to create skills and guidelines ultimately. A working group has been set up in Liber for citizen science. I am part of that, and Paul Aries is chairing that group. And we are not alone. In US, for example, we already have a librarian guide for citizen science, where librarians are taught how to work actively to support these projects. How much it worth, you may ask. In USA alone, only for biodiversity, not for physics, not for something else, is more than $2.5 billion each year in in-kind contribution from citizen scientists. $2.5 billion is brought additional to the research budget by citizen scientists. What is happening in Hungary, to zoom in a bit, we have here the presence of what is called GLOBE. This is the Global Learning and Observation to the Benefit of Environment. If you remember this movie, An Inconvenient Truth from Al Gore, after this his campaign, he started this GLOBE program, and this is present in Hungary. And in, you have a great number of schools that are part of this program, bringing science education into high schools and other groups that could contribute. It is said that you have 869 citizen science sites where citizen science is happening, with a number of 2,079 measurements today. This is an update record. There are some other ongoing projects. You have a platform called ESSRG that cultivates cross-boundary research in transdisciplinary ways, which is active in Hungary. You were probably thinking now about a definition. I am personally a bit against a definition. Since we don't have a definition for science, why should we have a definition for citizen science? If you really want to stop the scientific activities, ask the academics to agree on a definition on science, and then you stop the scientific activities. But you could consider that if you have the involvement of non-scientists that actively contribute to science with intellectual efforts, some sort of in-kind participation with tools and other resources, you are probably facing a citizen science activity. Remember, it's not only enhancing the scientific research, but it's also addressing societal needs, because this is the area where citizen scientists could be more active, and is also participating to education and networking. If you are ready, it's good to think about your readiness of your institution. If you have people that are interested on that, if they have the knowledge and the method, if they know enough about this too, if they have skills or you need to build some more, they have the competences or not, what kind of tools you need in your institution, and then how to design these new services. This will not fall from a blue sky. This has to be designed. This is an example of a masterclass in Denmark. They wanted to take it very seriously, and they created a series of masterclass. I've been invited there as a consultant, a two-day program that we delivered a masterclass to them. This is a typical outcome from such masterclass. This is what institutions say they need to build: science public bridge, infrastructure, training and skill, and advocacy if they want to kickstart citizen science activities. These are some articles that, together with some of your colleagues, I published in Citizen Science. The most recent one is from last week in Austria, actually, to your Library Association journal. And if you think about why citizen science and why not artificial intelligence that could see all these patterns and report to researchers, of course you can do it. The question is that stays on the table, probably not the right one, citizen science and artificial intelligence. The question is how to make them working together. So the answer will probably be both of them. And before closing, I'd like to show you the Gartner hype cycle for emerging technologies. We always put a lot of hopes on these new technologies, but there is a hype where we have, if you look down the curve of innovation trigger, the peak of inflated expectations, and then we have the valley of disillusion, And in the end, maybe we reach a plateau of productivity. With artificial intelligence, we are now picking up on innovation trigger. We are that far in the evolution. So I think these two things, artificial intelligence and citizen science, are working very nice and smoothly for helping scientists bringing new results. That being said, citizen science is not about making citizens better scientists. Citizen science is about making scientists better, more responsible citizens. That's my my last slide. And if you have questions and if you'd like to contact me, please feel free to do it. So thank you very much for listening.